This is Friday on the Other Side on Mind Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Fridays, we take a look at experiences and concepts that you might not think have a mental health component, but in fact, they do. Today's conversation is with someone who has a parent who has struggled with Alzheimer's. I am happy to introduce to you Ayesha Jones. Ayesha, welcome to Mind Talk, and I'd like to get started with just an introduction of who you are and what's going on in your life these days.
Thank you for having me on the show. You know, it's funny. I wake up every morning, and it feels like the movie Groundhog Day with Andy McDowell and Bill Murray. It's pretty much a 24-hour job being a caregiver to my mother, who has dementia and early onset Alzheimer's. She was diagnosed in April of 2014, and I was living in Louisiana at the time.
Huh.
I am the only child, and I noticed a few instances where things were not right, you know, getting a birthday card in the mail that said Merry Christmas or you know, having conversations, calling mom, seeing how she is, and she would tell me one story about four or five times over and over, but nothing really, you know, I never really assumed it was, you know, Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Until December of 2012, where I got a phone call from a nurse at Washington Hospital Center saying that my mom was found outside. Her blood sugar was extremely low. She had locked herself out the house. She realized I was in Louisiana. She asked, is there anyone that can come pick her up? Because I don't think she can drive. You know, the ambulance, something came to get her. And that pretty much, December 2013, started this journey of trying to get a diagnosis and pretty much rearranging my whole life to move back home to take care of her.
So when you got that call, you were in Louisiana and your mom was in Washington, D.C.?
Correct.
Okay, so all of a sudden your life was going to be very, very different. Talk about what your life was like in Louisiana. What kinds of things did you do? What was your day-to-day life like?
My day-to-day life in Louisiana, you know, you look back on stuff and you, you miss it. I thought it was a regular, you know, life. I had my regular 9-to-5. I was executive assistant to a general manager of a hotel down in the French Quarter. You know, I had just gotten married this past March.
Okay.
Not this past March, March 2014.
Okay.
So I was a newlywed in Louisiana. You know, my husband was working. We were working. We were saving money towards a house, you know, getting bills paid, just living an everyday life in Louisiana until, you know, I got the phone call.
Until you got the phone call. Tell us about what life was like for you growing up. Where were you born? I know you said you were an only child. Tell us about your early walk on the planet.
Okay. I am an only child, like I mentioned, but I was born and raised here in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
You know, my parents met at church, fell in love fairly quickly, got married, of course, had me, and promptly got divorced 2 years later.
Oh, my.
my mom waited later in life to have me. She had me at 39, and then, of course, 5 months later, she turned 40. But, you know, she lived her life. She traveled. She received her bachelor's and also her master's in education. And she was a teacher with the D.C. public school systems for 36 years before she retired. You know, I had a great life. I was the only child, like I mentioned. My parents were divorced, but my mom worked so hard to take me places and expose me to things. And I'm a more well-rounded individual because of that, because of her sacrifices for me. So I felt as though, you know, with everything that she did for me when I was younger, I mean, I didn't want to, but I felt as though I owed her to come back here to kind of take care of her.
Tell us some of the early fond memories you have of growing up with mom, single parent at that point, working really hard, but providing you with wonderful opportunities, it sounded like.
Yes. Like I mentioned, my mom was a teacher for 36 years in the business department. So she would teach typing, of course, computer processing. There would be times where she would have to go on conventions, and she sacrificing would bring me on vacation, on conventions with her, me as a child thinking it's vacation, because, oh, I'm living it up in a hotel room. But, you know, I remember in the eighth grade, they had a National Business Association conference in Puerto Rico during school year. I went. I came back with a gorgeous tan. And, of course, everyone in the ninth grade is, hey, where have you been for a whole week? trips, sacrificing to put me in the best camps, of course. I was a Girl Scout for a long time. I was also active in Campfire Girls. Mom would put me into soccer, dance classes.
Like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she really kept me moving.
It
kept me going.
It sounds like she did. So it really sounds like a wonderful life. You know, I mean, I know you know that there's so many stories floating around about being a single parent and being the child of a single parent. And it sounds like for you, it really was a wonderful life.
It was.
Did you have any contact with your dad during that time?
I did. I did have some contact with my father. You know, there is a little backstory to it. Unfortunately, you know, my parents fell in love, but I don't think my father was mentally ready, you know, for the responsibility of marriage and a child. And, you know, he did stupid things.
Okay.
One of these stupid instances landed him in prison for 10 years.
For 10 years?
For 10 years. So the first, pretty much my parents got divorced when I was 2. So from 2 to maybe 12, 13, I would only have, of course, phone contacts with my father.
Okay.
Until that time, you know, my mom sat me down and said, you know, your dad is not where we told you he was. He is, you know, in prison. And that affected me as well, definitely. I know that they debated going back and forth, should we tell Aisha, should we not?
Mm-hmm.
But they did ended up telling me. I kind of wish they didn't, but, you know, at least they were honest. So I got to, you know, learn how to process all of that on my own, like seeing kids with their dads hanging out and me knowing that mine is, you know, behind prison. That was a bit rough. But once he got out, we tried to forge and establish a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I have a relationship with my dad now. He lives in Virginia Beach with my stepmom. And, you know, he's working. And actually, he just came up for a visit. So, you know, we do have a relationship now. Of course, my mom wants nothing to do with him. Even with the Alzheimer's, she still remembers Dennis, what he did to her.
Okay.
But, yeah, I do have a relationship with him.
Where had you been told he was?
New York, working.
Okay. And how long did that story stay in place for you?
Years.
Years. Okay.
Years. Yeah. They told me that he was in prison, I want to say, when I was about 9.
Okay.
So between the ages of, you know, 2 or 3, you know, I really started comprehending things until 9. Yeah.
When you were finally told the information, did you have any feelings of anger towards your mom?
I think I did. I think I had anger towards her and him. One, just being towards my father, why would you do something like this to destroy our family? And one, to my mother, yes, for lying to me all this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had this fantasy of my dad, oh, my dad's in New York working, and oh, Aisha, your dad's on the phone. Okay, great. But being as a little kid and never connected, why I never saw him.
Uh-huh.
So I had, I'm being an only child, great imagination. I had this fantasy in my head of who my dad was, and it kind of knocked me down to reality, you know, when I found out that he was in prison.
So at the point that you found out, there, would you say that there was a bit of a rift in your relationship with your mom, or would you say that essentially it kept moving forward as it had been?
It had kept moving forward.
Okay.
As it, you know, has been. I mean, like I said, I was 9, and of course I was upset, but at that time, I didn't know what a grudge was, so I didn't hold a grudge. We would talk about it. You know, Mom felt as though sometimes I needed to get help, so maybe she would send me to a counselor to kind of talk it out, you know, therapy-wise, which I felt, you know, really helped the situation. But I never really harbored anything. I never was never upset at her about it. I mean, I was upset, but I was never angry and holding on to a grudge about
it. All right. So at some point you leave Washington, D.C. and move to Louisiana. Yes. And what was your plan? Was your plan to stay there for a brief period of time and return, or were you just going to live your life there?
I was going to live my life there. It's funny. Hurricane Katrina came and hit the Gulf Coast in 2005. And the love of my life was evacuating from Katrina during that time. Mm-hmm. He actually had family members up here. His aunt is a professor, at Bowie State University. His late uncle was a colonel that worked at the Pentagon. So, you know, his whole family pretty much came up here and, you know, stayed in their basement. Everything, they lost everything. You know, I met him and I fell in love. You know, a gradual friendship started, but I fell in love and he fell in love. His family decided, you know, it's time for us to move back home. Our home is ready. And he came to me one day and said, you know, I think I'm going to move back home. Would you ever consider, you know, moving away? And I thought to myself, hey, I went away to college. Why not?
Okay.
I packed up and I moved down to Louisiana with him. And everyone just said, oh, you're dumb. Why are you moving? There's no commitment. You're not engaged. You're not married. That's just a boyfriend. But hey, I got to live my life, and it's my life for me and no one else. So if you're calling me dumb, hey, I'm dumb. But I didn't move in vain. We ended up getting married and everything. But, you know, I was just flying off the seat of my pants and say, hey, I'll move. Why not? And thinking that everything was great with my mom.
Sure.
You know, I was like, okay, I'm fine.
So what year did you move to Louisiana?
2009.
Okay. And at some point, it seems to me like a commitment was made and you did marry.
Yes. He did get married, yes.
And
he is
so
here with me right now. He moved up to D.C. with me. He hates it, of course, because, you know, thinking of D.C. makes him think of the issues from Katrina and having to evacuate so quickly and everything.
Sure.
But, you know, he loves me and he knows that I need the support here. So, of course, he's here for me.
Well, which is really wonderful. The beginning, though, of your marriage, Louisiana, you're going to work, he's going to work, and you've got a future planned out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you begin to realize that there's something going on with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like for you to talk to us about that first realization that you had, that there was really this was not mom just having a bad day. This was something really kind of worrisome. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer having a conversation with Aisha Jones, and we're talking about her experiences with her mom, who ultimately was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and Aisha is a caregiver. We'll take a break and be right back. Aisha, tell us about that first moment when you were really clear that there was something really going on with your mom.
You know, my mom is a very social and vocal person. She is literally, I don't know, she's very jovial, very social. She's always in clubs, always on the phone, would always call me if I hadn't called her in a day. Aisha, why haven't I heard from you? And it's funny, the calls had kind of stopped. They kind of dwindled. And I would call them like, hey, Mom, how's everything going? Oh, everything's fine. And then she'll go off on a tangent and start talking about different stories. And I'm like, okay, well, she's a little bit older. You know, maybe that's what's going on. And I remember in December of 2013, and I hadn't talked to her in about 2 days. Kept calling and calling, no answer. Third day, she picked up. I said, Ma, where have you been? Well, I was in the hospital. I said, well, what happened? I fell. I didn't know how I fell. So Tonks had to come pick me up. Tonks was her boyfriend back then.
Okay.
Tonks had to come over here and take me to the hospital because I fell. And I said, well, that's odd. She fell, but she doesn't know why or how she fell. But still, it just didn't click.
Okay.
I said, you know what? I'm going to take off work. Let me drive up to D.C. and see what's going on. And my husband, well, fiancé back then, he's such a blessing. He requested some days off. It took us a week to get it together, but, you know, him and I drove up. We took 4 days,
wow,
4 days off of work, and we drove up here to check on her. And, you know, I stayed here at the house and cooked, and I would just notice little things, like there was a hanger in the refrigerator. I would open up her closet, and there was Q-tips, dirty Q-tips taped to the top of the closet. I'm like, okay, well, why is that there?
Okay, all right.
I would go through some of her bills, and I see stuff that hadn't been paid. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? I hurriedly grabbed the bills, and I said, well, Mom, what's going on with these? Like, this one says final notice. Oh, that's fine. That's mine. Snatch it out of my hand. Of course, she's a proud woman. She would never want to tell her daughter anything, right. You know, being so single and independent for all these years. So that was December 2013. Then, of course, a couple of weeks later, that's when I got the call from someone at Washington Hospital Center saying they found my mom sitting outside. She was really cold. Her face was clammy. Can you send someone to come pick her up?
Oh,
and of course,
boy.
I got in contact with her friend, her boyfriend at the time, Tons, and I guess he came to get her and, you know, brought her home. So fast forward to March of 2014, my wedding. You know, one of my mom's closest friends, Barbara Clark, you know, helped arrange everything to get my mom down here, you know, paid for my mom's plane ticket because Mom kept saying she didn't have any money, got everything situated at the hotel. And when I saw my mom, you know, for the first time at the hotel, she just looked so frail. From the time I saw her in December to March, she had lost like almost 30-40 pounds.
Oh,
she
my.
Wasn't eating. Yeah, she wasn't eating. She was, my mom is 5'8". She's always been about 200 pounds.
Okay.
Now she's like 5'7" or 5'6". Of course, she's shrinking, but she was down to like 160-something, 165.
Oh my. Okay.
And it was weird because I just saw her in December. I came up here to check on her. We even went to go look for dresses, like my wedding dress. She found her mother of the bride's gown in those couple of days. And then I went back to New Orleans thinking, oh, everything's okay. She's going to get those bills together. I guess I was in denial.
Yeah.
But at the hotel, like during the wedding ceremony, she was just so quiet. And that's not my mom. She's very vocal, very talkative.
Okay.
And she kept saying, Aisha, do you see that water? Do you see that water at the front of the church during the rehearsal? And I said, no, there's no water up there, Mama. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And looking back on it, those were signs of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Very paranoid all the time, seeing things that are not there. And I just remember, it was the happiest moment of my life, but I just remember, I'm sorry if I'm getting misty. I just remember in the cab, the limo ride to the church. And I'm like, Mama, you look so beautiful. And you know, knowing her, she says it back, and she just looks at me with a blank stare like she didn't know who I was. And
oh, my.
She's just so quiet, and I didn't know. I didn't understand why she was acting like that. I'm sorry.
No apologies are necessary. It's the happiest day of your life, and yet in some respects such a challenging, troubling part of the day. Looking at your mom, it sounds like, kind of looked like she was wasting away in front of you.
Yes, and that's when I realized something is wrong. Something's wrong with Gloria. Something's wrong with my mother, because this is not normally how she is. You know, one of her best friends, like I mentioned, Barbara, you know, took her to the doctor, my mom's primary caregiver, you know, that next month, April. And my mom's primary caregiver, Dr. Shelley Williams, said, you know, I think Gloria is exhibiting some of the stronger symptoms of dementia. And, you know, when Barbara emailed me and would tell me things, because she was, you know, one of my closest allies up here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, your mom has to start taking this medication, but I don't know if she's going to take it every day. I said, well, you know what, I'll call her and I'll remind her to start taking this medication, Aricept, for, you know, to slow the progression of it.
All right. Let's back up a little bit. You've used the word dementia. For those who aren't clear about what dementia is, what was your understanding of it at that time?
Dementia, after doing some research, you know, back in the day, people just said, oh, that person's going senile.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought dementia was. Oh, that person's just going crazy. But it's not, and it's not. It's literally almost, like her brain is shrinking and she's starting to forget specific things. I really didn't do a lot of research into it, and I never thought that this would be the culprit. But, you know, my wedding was in March, and then come April, I kept calling her the house phone, and it said, I'm sorry, this phone has been turned off. And I said, okay, that's very weird, because my mom has had the same house number since she moved into this condo back in 1980.
Okay. So this was just a month after your wedding?
Month after my wedding,
okay.
April 2014, I called her cell phone. I'm sorry, this Sprint customer. And I'm like, why is her cell phone off? I called one of my aunts. They live in Roanoke, Virginia. My mom's from Roanoke, Virginia, just like 4-hour drive from D.C. I said, hey, ladies, can somebody go check on mom or something? The three sisters, my mom is the oldest of five girls. The three of the younger sisters drove up to just check on mom, and the house was in disarray. She had no food in the refrigerator.
Oh, no.
So who knows what she was eating. Mm. Oh, by the way, my mother's diabetic. So if her blood sugar gets too low, or of course if her blood sugar gets too high, she can stroke out at any time. So there was no food in the refrigerator. Dirty clothes had been backed up by the washing machine. My youngest aunt Tanya found bills that were pretty much, they were going to foreclose on my mom's condo.
Oh, my.
My mom had been here. She had stopped paying the mortgage. She had stopped paying the gas bill. She had stopped paying Pepco. Like, things were almost, if they had not come up here in April, things were going to get cut off in the next 2 days.
And so she was going to be homeless in about a minute.
Exactly. So my aunts kind of convinced her, hey, let's go to the bank. Let's get a lot of this stuff on automatic debit so you don't have to worry about paying the bills anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, her being strong, no, I can do it. I can handle it. And she'll sit and try to, you know, write checks and stuff, but it wasn't connecting. So, you know, thank God my youngest aunt kind of talked to her and controlled her, and they went up to the bank and got everything pretty much, you know, automatically withdrawn off her account so she didn't have to worry about bills.
Okay.
But I said, that has to be, that's insane, because my mom is always on top of her bills. Like, she's been the secretary of her national sorority, for God's sake. She's just, the woman is just methodical. She has everything written down and planned out.
Just as a single parent, you know, you watch every penny because you know it's got a place that it's supposed to go to.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you knew something was seriously
wrong there.
Yeah.
When Tanya called and said, hey, there's this notice here saying your mom hasn't paid the mortgage since December. And
oh,
I said,
boy.
December, that's when she fell. That's when she said she fell and didn't realize how she fell.
Okay.
She hadn't paid the mortgage since December. Phone bill, $400. Mm-hmm. Verizon house phone bill, like $300. Like, it was insane. My aunts were just like, what are you going to do about this situation? You're the only child. You're her closest of kin. You need to move up here right now.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's another thing. That's not saying threats, but that's when my aunts, I guess, started telling me that something really isn't right. You need to get up here now, and we don't want to find your mom dead in the house because you're in Louisiana. And, yeah, I feel as though they could have been a little bit nicer about that.
Well, pretty scary,
yeah.
I mean, way to hear it. In addition to the fact that with the kind of illness that your mom has, you know, she needs specialized care, and that wasn't your area of expertise.
Correct. I've been in hospitality for the past 11 years. I ran front desk. I assisted general managers. I did not know the undertaking that you know, I was almost in store for.
And a month into your marriage.
Yes.
Talk about the
conversation. No honeymoon for us. We pretty much foregoed it. You know, he said, you know, we've been together for 7 years, 6 years. We'll be fine. I said, yeah, you're right. You're right about that. You know, and pretty much, like I said, my aunts came up here in April to get stuff together. I realized May, of course, we have the holiday coming up. Why don't I fly up here? I started doing research as a George Washington, while sitting at my computer in New Orleans, I started doing research. The George Washington University Clinic has a special memory care clinic and geriatrics. I said, you know what, maybe something is deeper than this, just this dementia and this paranoia. So I came up in May of last year, and I took Mom to the memory clinic. And, of course, they did their series of tests and make a clock and write your name and things like that. And they said, you know what, Miss Adams, your mother does have dementia, and it looks like it's early onset Alzheimer's disease that's affecting, because they have different dementias that affect the brain.
Okay.
And Mom's is Alzheimer's that's affecting it.
Gotcha.
Like, they have vascular dementia and they have other ones, but yeah. And I said, okay, well, now that I have the diagnosis in hand, let me tell my husband what's going on and let's see if we can get this together. Dr. James Cooper, he really has been amazing at the memory care clinic at George Washington University. He's really kind. He's nice. Of course, Mom hates him because he always asks questions she doesn't understand. But he has been, you know, he has been a dream. And literally within that month of March where we got the diagnosis, I moved the beginning of July. So I finished up my job. I gave my job notice, you know, tied up our loose ends. My husband and I had just renewed our lease on our apartment because we were saving for a house. We didn't want to move. I had to break my lease. We just pretty much started selling everything in our apartment, you know, furniture, some things I have stored in my mother-in-law's house in New Orleans, and some things we wanted the extra money to come up here.
Mm-hmm.
My husband sold his truck, and I booked pretty much, by the grace of God, you know, I have a good support system. My godparents booked my one-way ticket to D.C., and I moved back home.
A one-way ticket to D.C.
Yep.
Aisha, we're gonna take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to go back to that conversation with your husband, who my guess is has a first name.
Nathaniel.
Okay. When we come back, I'd like to talk about that initial conversation with Nathaniel about what you were thinking you needed to do and to do quickly so early on in the marriage. We'll take a break and we will return with Aisha's story. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back, folks, to this edition of Mind Talk, continuing the conversation with Aisha Jones. Aisha, take us to the day that you talked to your husband and told him what your thoughts were, what your plans were as to what you were going to do with your mom. There's so many ways in which that kind of conversation could have gone. How did it go?
You know, I thank God for my husband every day. He is very, very supportive. And he loves my mom like his mom. He's the baby of six kids. Five boys and one girl my mother-in-law had, and he's the baby. And he, like I said, he treats my mom with the utmost respect, and he loves her. When I first got back in May after the real diagnosis from Dr. Cooper at the George Washington Memory Clinic, I said, Nat, you know, I might have to move home. And he said he completely understood.
Wow.
Because if it was my mom, you know, he would do the exact same thing. If it was his mom, he would do the exact same thing. And he said, you think she could move down here? I said, that would be super fantastic, wouldn't it? Because he was working for a really good property management company in New Orleans. And
okay.
He just gotten a promotion. And I had just gotten a, you know, slight up in pay at my position. You know, we were doing great. We were going to move into a new townhouse that was owned by his property company with, you know, considerable lower rent, of course, while we were saving for our house. He said, you know, we can get us a three-bedroom townhouse instead of a two-bedroom, you know, for something for your mom. And I said, okay, great. And I would call her, and I'd say, Mom, you ready to come to New Orleans? I'm not coming to New Orleans. I'll burn this place down before anyone takes me out of this house. This is my house, Aisha. I've lived here for years. And, yes, it was rough.
Yeah, it sounds
it
like
rough.
It.
And then I said, you know what, Nat, I keep trying to get her to come down here. I don't think she's going to come. I might have to move. I might have to go home. And he said he understood. And I moved up here in July. Actually, I got here July 2nd, 2014. And my husband followed. He stayed and continued to work in New Orleans, and because he really loved his job. And I felt so guilty.
Mm.
Like, I did not want him to quit, but I didn't want to have a long-distance relationship.
Sure.
It was so weird. But I wanted him to still be happy in New Orleans, but I definitely know I needed him up here, and I would miss him. It was just it was a big catch-22 for me.
It sounds really hard.
Yes. It was very hard. He stayed in New Orleans until August, and I moved up here in July. So
okay.
We were separated for about 6 or 7 weeks.
Okay.
You know, prior to him actually moving up here. And it was weird because Dr. Cooper said, you know, I don't know how long your mom has had this, but I think it's been over 10 years that she's been having symptoms. And I said, 10 years? I never noticed it.
Mm.
I never noticed it. And he said, well, unfortunately, now she's at the point where she really can't be by herself anymore. And, you know, he sent a letter to the DMV stating, you know, Mrs. Adams is not allowed to drive anymore. You know, so that's when things really, really started getting real for me. But, yeah, I moved up here in July, and that followed in August. I sent Mom down to Roanoke to visit her sisters,
mm-hmm.
and I flew down to New Orleans one way, and Nat and I drove our car back up, packed with boxes and things to store in my little tiny bedroom here I've had since I was a baby.
Oh, my.
And, you know, we got up here in August, and we've been living. We've been going through the motions. I want to say we've been going through the motions. We really haven't been living because, you know, in New Orleans, we would go to the beach whenever we felt like, oh, honey, you're off today, I'm off today. Come on, let's go to Mississippi. Let's go to the casino. Let's go to Baton Rouge. We were just the type of couple we were. We just always were active, and now we're almost pretty much confined in this house if I can't find a sitter.
Well, talk about what it's like for you day to day. Are you your mother's primary caregiver?
Yes. I wake up every morning between 7 and 8. I get up, I test her blood sugar to make sure, you know, elevated, and I make breakfast. I make lunch. I make dinner. I entertain her. I take her to the hair salon. I try to get her out to the movies. We haven't done restaurants in a while because she's getting a little bit too much. I have these fantastic cards I made, well, I got from Vistaprint that just say, you know, my mother has Alzheimer's. Please be patient with us when we go out in case she starts to get into that mood or that way.
What an interesting idea. So you just hand those cards out when it's necessary.
Yes, very discreetly, because I don't want everyone to embarrass her, but
right.
Sometimes I feel embarrassed sometimes with the things that or she says or does, but I just discreetly hand it off, and people are kind. They understand, and so, you know, they're kind to us. But yes, I'm her primary caregiver, and it's become increasingly difficult now for her to take her medicine, and I'll say, Mom, put it in your mouth and swallow, and of course, the disconnect between putting a pill in your mouth and mm-hmm. swallowing is probably getting lost now.
Okay.
I have to grind all of her medications up and put it in smoothies, and of course, I have to watch what she eats because I don't want her blood sugar to get so high.
Right.
She'll stroke out, or I don't want it to get so low that, you know, she'll get sick. It's walking a very fine balance, trying to get her up. Come on, Mom, let's go walk to get some exercise. Oh, I don't feel like it, or then she'll start talking on a different tangent, or she'll sit in the window and say, you see that blue car over there? And there won't be any cars over there.
Okay, okay. So it sounds like it would be kind of overwhelming, kind of scary, kind of a lot of things. What is it like for you emotionally as you see your mother go through this illness?
It's very difficult because yeah. just knowing my mom's background, how she's been so strong all these years, she's educated beyond, you know, some people's wildest dreams. She's traveled so many places, so many stamps in her passport, yet she doesn't remember how to brush her teeth. It's sad to me. It's so sad. It's like she's almost reverting back to a child. But with a child, you can teach.
Right.
If I show Mom to do something literally in 2 minutes, she won't remember.
Okay.
It's really sad. It's really sad.
The impact of all of this on your brand new marriage.
Oof. Like that is a tough question. Like I said before, my husband, Nathaniel, he's a blessing to me, and he is so strong. But yes, this does impact our marriage. Us living here in my mom's house in my old bedroom does impact our marriage. I have had 2 miscarriages because of either stress or I don't know. So it's hard for us wishing we could start our own family, but it's almost like I can't right now because I have this 72-year-old child I have to take care of.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't want to wait so long to have kids. I remember back in the day, Mom was back when she was, you know, fine. She always said to me, Aisha, don't you be an old mother like me.
Mm.
I said, Mom, I won't be an old mother like you. Trust me, that's the last thing I want to do. But sometimes I sit and wonder, when would I even have time to have a child, or do I even want to have kids now? Like, taking care of her has changed my opinion on so many things. And then with the miscarriages, that just completely messed over my mind, too. So it's almost like I stopped my life right now. I have stopped my life right now.
Yeah,
my life on pause to take care of her.
And the miscarriage is such painful losses, and to have more than one.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the only person providing care for your mother? Is there any sort of any occupational therapist coming in to work with your mom? Anybody coming in to work with your mom?
No. We live in Ward 4, D.C., of course, Northwest. There is Terrific, Inc., which is a social working, I guess, company that works with the Department of Health here in D.C. and, you know, the older, the Department of Aging. I've called and I've left probably 1 or 2 messages, no response. I found a fantastic adult daycare center. It's complimentary, of course. I took her one time. She hated it. So I'm going to try to get her to go again.
Yeah.
Keep her, you know, social and stuff. But she goes bowling on Fridays with her ex-boyfriend.
Okay.
She's pretty much broken up with him now that the diagnosis has come. She's always paranoid. But yet, she broke up with him, but she's always asking, why hasn't he called me? Where is Tots? Is Tots over there? So it's odd. I keep her busy as much as I can.
And
no therapist coming in. You know, I read to her, of course. We look at old pictures together. She loved looking at old pictures from when she was in college. Wasn't I cute, Aisha? Yes, Mom, you are adorable. You are gorgeous. So, you know, I try to keep her stimulated that way. But I'm going to try to get her back into this daycare swing of things, and maybe that'll help me out.
Is there anyone at the daycare center, a social worker or someone who can help you facilitate her entrance into the program?
It's from what I've been told, it's how their comfort level with the patient. It's how they're comfortable.
Okay.
So, you know, when we walked in, I hold Mom's hand everywhere we go now, and we walked in, and I said, Mom, look at this. This is going to be your new job, you know, because sometimes it's good to kind of fool them.
Sure.
What? I don't need to work, Aisha. You know, sometimes it's good to kind of fool them, you know,
right.
Kind of trick them into doing things. I said, well, this is, you don't want to work here? This is fun. No, I don't need to be here. I don't need to be here. So maybe I'll try again with a different scenario to see if she can kind of, you know, like to get around people that have Alzheimer's, I guess, or dementia like her.
Have you contacted the Alzheimer's Association?
Yes, I have. And actually, I'm doing the Alzheimer's Walk this year.
Okay.
My very first time doing the walk. It's October 24th. They do have fantastic resources as well. But then again, I hate to say it, quote unquote, my mom has made too much money because she has pension.
Yeah.
Everything, we would have to pay a lot of this stuff out of pocket. She does not have long-term care insurance. So again, it's like, do I sit here and exhaust all of her retirement to either put her in a home or someplace or bring other people in to take care of her? It's just, I'm sometimes at a loss myself trying to think of what we're going to do on the later, you know, stages.
Well, yeah, and it just seems like it would be useful, quite frankly, very useful, if there were some additional resources that were available to you to actually come in the home and work with her. So what I'm going to do is to ask those who are listening who may have some thoughts about resources just to send me an email to myndtalk@aol.com. And Aisha, if I get any resources, I will pass them along to you for you to take a look at to see whether or not they're a good fit.
I am open and willing to take any and every help. I really, really am. You know, I thought it would be a team effort that, you know, everyone's going to rally around. And yes, I have, there are some of Mom's family, some of Mom's friends that call her and check up on her. They call me, hey, Aisha, I'll take Mom for a couple of hours or I'll do this. But, I mean, to be honest, her sisters, since April last year, they haven't been much help at all.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So
after kind of scaring you into dropping everything and coming here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, again, thank God for Nathaniel, because if he wasn't here, I'd probably rip my hair out trying to take care of her.
He sounds like a keeper.
That's, oh, God, he is.
That's my 7 recommendation.
7 years together, 1 year married. Woohoo!
Wow. Aisha, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to find out what you're doing for yourself during all this stress that's going on in your life. We'll take a break. We'll be right back, folks. This is Pamela Brewer. And again, that email is myndtalk@aol.com. If you've got any resources or any ideas for Aisha, please send them along. Hello, folks. We continue the conversation with Aisha. Aisha, you are a newlywed. You are a 110% time caregiver for your mom. What are you doing for yourself?
Not much, to be quite honest. I've always been an avid reader, and I've since fallen off since I've moved back home, but I'm going to start picking up some good books again because I miss just taking my imagination elsewhere. I've gained, I have to say, probably about 45 pounds since I've moved back home. Mm-hmm. And I know that exercise is a great stress reliever, so I'm going to start getting more active again. That's definitely for sure. But to be honest, I really don't have a lot of time for me. I really consume my thoughts and everything are consumed with how I'm going to make mom comfortable and how I'm just going to get through this day smoothly. I really don't take a lot of time for me, and I know that's bad. And they say caregivers need more help sometimes because you don't want to end up getting sick. But just for right now, just my primary focus is just making sure she's okay. And until then, unfortunately, I'm putting a lot of my stuff to the wayside. But yeah, I want to get back to reading, and I definitely want to get back to, you know, getting healthy again.
Well, and actually, there are two caregivers in your house because your husband is being a caregiver for you and your mom. You're being a caregiver for your mom. So it sounds like the two of you really need to have some, if it's at all possible, consistent time for each other individually and then for yourselves as a couple. One of the things that I would wonder, and just ask folks who were listening if you have any resources to share, if there's a way for you to have someone who regularly comes in, even if it's just to sit with mom for, you know, several hours a day, once a week or twice a week. That would be really useful so that you can kind of plan for yourself whether that's the day you take a walk or you go to the gym or you just run up and down the stairs at home. So, you know, some way for you to plan, because right now the only plan that it sounds like you have in your day is to focus, like I said, 110% on your mom. What about when it's time to sleep? Does your mom sleep through the night? Are you concerned about that?
No, she does not sleep through the night. She is up walking back and forth, trying to open doors. We have come to the point where we are double bolting the doors at night, like the front door. We live in a condo, so of course we're on the ground unit. There's a security door, and then we have, of course, the door to our actual condo. You know, she'll open the door, front door to our house, and then stand at the security gate and just watch all of Randolph and Georgia Avenue pass by. And you know, I found her 1 a.m. doing that. So we have now kind of unscrewed the front lock, so if she tries to flip it, it won't unlock. We do have an alarm system. However, you know, if it's not turned off within 15 seconds, of course, phones are ringing, they're sending people out, and mom doesn't remember the code. So I try not to keep the alarm on. But yeah, we just, Nat stays awake and listens, and sometimes I'm up and I'm listening. But once she gets in and comfortable, sometimes she does sleep, you know, completely during the night. It's very on and off if she's up or not.
All right. So clearly there are lots of areas in which you and your husband could stand to have some resources. Is there anything available for your mom at GW, George Washington University?
Yes, just paying out of pocket, unfortunately.
Can really take its toll, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I am surprised.
I met with an elder care attorney, and you know, we've discussed some of these things. And you know, she said it's going to be a large financial taking to, you know, take care of her. Because, like I said, quote unquote, she makes too much money. If she had Medicaid, a lot of the stuff would have been paid for already for free. But because she has Medicare and because she has a pension, you know, they consider her, you know, you're not eligible for the free stuff, to say the least, unfortunately.
And you're now not, I mean, your 24-hour-a-day job is taking care of your mom.
Yes. When I first moved back here last year, I wanted to work. I got a job, and it did not last very long. You know, she was always nervous. Aisha, when are you coming home? Mom, did you eat the dinner I made for you in the microwave? No, I'm not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, unfortunately, I don't think this is going to work. So, you know, like I worked for you know, a week or so, and I had to let it go. You know, and thank God my husband is here working, but he's working, and then he comes home and has to deal with this. It's a lot.
It's a whole lot. And you guys never had that honeymoon?
We actually did.
Okay.
We delayed it to the point we went on a cruise in October of last year.
Wonderful.
So 6 months. You know, I got some grief from my family. Why are you going on a honeymoon? That can wait. Your mother has Alzheimer's. I said, yeah, I understand that. But for him and I, our sanity, we needed it. So I put my mom on a plane and sent her to my godparents' house in Orlando.
Okay.
And she stayed for a week and she loved it. I think she was a little confused about where she was.
Yeah.
When we got home, there was about 12 voicemails saying, Aisha, where are you? Calling from her, calling the house looking for me. But yeah, we did do our honeymoon. Thank God.
I'm pleased to hear that you did your honeymoon. I'm sort of astounded that you have family members who weren't supportive of you and your husband taking a honeymoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are these the same aunts that you talked about earlier?
Yes. The same three aunts that came up here and, you know, helped her get some of her bills and things together. I thought that maybe in their mindset they're thinking, okay, well, now Aisha's here. We don't really need to call. We don't need to check up. But I have tried to stress to them, I think you should call, because there's going to be a point where she's not even going to remember who you are.
Right.
And I think you will want that time with her now. I mean, of course, mom can be difficult, but you just have to grin and bear it. I remember when I first got up here, I was taking everything so personal. But Nathaniel was just like, honey, it's the disease. It's not her anymore.
Yeah.
It's just the disease. And
yeah.
I have to keep that in my mind.
And sometimes it's hard. This is your mom.
Yes.
And clearly you had such a different life. She had such a different life planned for herself. You had such a different life planned for you.
Mm-hmm.
For those folks who are listening who may be at the very beginning of this journey, any thoughts or guidance you would like to share?
I would definitely, I don't know how many people are spiritual, but I really do believe in prayer. And
okay.
Prayer has really helped me. Talking to God has really, really helped. Also, you do need a really good support system, whether it be a husband or family member or even friends. You know, like my aunts haven't been the greatest, but a lot of my mom's sorority sisters and
wonderful.
A lot of her friends have stepped up, and I'm so grateful. I'm grateful for them. But I would just say every case is different, and just try to be patient. Try to be patient and pray.
You know, every case really is different. Have you thought about the time when you might not be able to keep mom at home?
Yes, I have thought about it. And I've done a lot of research looking into these nursing homes and assisted living facilities. They can reach up to $100,000 a year. When that time comes, when it gets to, you know, the later stages, because right now she's stage 4 or 5, you know, not paying bills, that sort of can't cook, doing that sort of thing. But when she gets up to stage 7, of course, that's bedridden, can't really eat anymore. I'm going to have hospice come in and start taking care of her.
Okay. Because it will be time.
It will be time, and I promised my mom she would stay in this house, and I'm really going to intend to keep that promise.
And I just have to say thank you so much for taking time today to share your story with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Brewer, for giving me this platform to share. I just hope my story touches others, and I know there are other people out here dealing with this, but we are not alone, and we're going to make it through.
Absolutely. You are not alone, and you have helped. Just by telling your story today, you have helped many people who thought they were alone to know that they're not. So again, I thank you very much. And thank you, folks, for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. Remember that you can listen to this program again and all Mind Talk programs on demand at mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.org. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace treatment with a licensed medical or mental health professional of your choosing. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26 by 2 Communications. Assistant to the executive producer is Lede Battle. This conversation was made possible today by Ariel Medley. Thank you very much for your assistance. And for folks, for more information about Mind Talk, please go to mindtalk.org. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. That's 654-5286. And remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.